Don't look now, 'cause your 15 minutes are running out. See that countdown is heading to say, don't look now, fire's out.
Welcome to Don't Look Now, the podcast with your hosts, Jenny McDonald and Will Hageman, coming to you every Tuesday with our glorious podcast featuring random stuff from all over the place, whatever topics we think are fun, especially Jenny, since Jenny is our researcher in chief. I'm just here to play along, so I have no idea what we're about to talk about. Could be history, could be mystery, could be the origins of Scooby-Doo. I don't know, we're gonna find out. So give me some hints here, Jenny. What are we talking about?
A historical mystery on par with what Scooby-Doo could get away with.
Ooh.
Right?
No. Sounds fun, but I have no idea.
Yeah, no. That's kind of, I mean, yes and no, right? Yeah. Because those are the only things I know how to think about. But yeah. Let me tell you a quick story.
All right.
Started in the 13th century. And this is 100% because Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift are 100% in my social medias and I can't get them out. And I have been laughing 24/7. Lawrence has lost their mind. They are posting fake like rumors about her showing up in different restaurants and shops downtown to drive these little teeny boppers downtown. Because her friend went to KU like 15 years ago. Yeah. And so that means, of course, she has fond memories. Calm down. She's not here.
And she's not just hanging out at KU all the time. I'm shocked.
No, it's true. So I thought I should find a famous love story that did not go as one would plan.
All right.
From the 13th century for you, Will.
For 13th century, huh?
Yeah.
All right. So 13th century, we're talking 1200s then. So let's see. I can think of like fake ones, but I'm trying to think of a real. They're like the two lovers that, like, you know, are in the different like graveyards, and they've got the little like thing that climbs over from one to the other. That's like a famous thing in France. I don't know. I can't think of their names, of course.
No,
I don't know, man.
Story. I think the important part of the story is that the man doesn't actually make it far into the story.
Wow.
Which is pretty funny. So I'm going to give you more hints.
All right.
Now, when you say in the 13th century, a woman fell in love, you think that this story is going to go just a certain way, right?
Mm-hmm.
They fall in love. She goes off into the sunset happily ever after. But this is a little bit different because her lover convinces her to dress like a man. So.
All right.
Got to think like in modern dating, probably a red flag, but 13th century, here's three things that could potentially be the reason, right? Number one, he's in a position that having this particular woman would raise eyebrows. Maybe he's married. Maybe he's a nobleman and she's a peasant. Or what could be even more difficult for a man in this time period? Could he be a Catholic priest sneaking a woman into the monastery? And I'm calling it a monastery for lack of a better word about where Catholic men sleep, because it would be not surprising to find another man in his room. Mm-hmm. Right?
Nice.
I don't know the exact answer to that particular side of this story.
I am intrigued. All right.
Right. So what we do know is at some point this woman went from being in love with a man to dressing as a man.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly became a priest who rose through the Catholic hierarchy and becomes
a pope. Nice.
Have you heard this story?
I have not. I mean, I can't even think of the name. I've heard people allude to this, but I know nothing about it. So,
Pope Joan.
Okay.
But remember, that's the way we pronounce it now. Mm-hmm. It's also been commonly pronounced as Pope Joan.
Yeah.
Or John. And there is like coins that you can find of Pope John during this time period. So it's kind of like, what does this mean? they could also be fakes, because this story is such a prolific, hot mess of a story. And it seems like it might just be one of those rumors that just set on fire, you know, centuries after it happened. So here's the story. Now, the story first appears in the Chronicle of Metz in the Metinus in the early 13th centuries when it's written. The story is supposed to take place in 1099.
Okay.
So we're already a couple years past when this would have happened. So the idea is that there's a pope who is female. It's not written down in the list from the Catholic Church because she was disguised as a man throughout the entire period of time that she was pope. She acted like a man. She behaved like a man. She had secretaries. She was a cardinal. She was a pope. And no one knew this was a woman until one day, while mounting a horse, she inexplicably gave birth to a child.
As you do.
It's very easy, you know, when you're hopping on a horse, for one of them bad boys to just pop right out. No questions asked, right?
Yep.
And immediately the Roman guard bound her to the horse's tail and dragged her, and people stoned her for about a half a mile, where she died. And then she is buried in the tomb of St. Peter, because, you know, it makes sense to bury her in the church in St. Peter's Cemetery. And at the same time, the four-day feast of the Fast of the Female Pope was established. Seems legit, right? Definitely doesn't seem like something people are going to build on over time.
Yeah.
Seems simple enough. So this is picked up and adapted for a work on the seven gifts of the Holy Ghost. And the legend gets bigger when it appears in the third version of yet another book in the later part of the 13th century. This version attaches a name to the female pope and says that the name was John Angelicus, or John of Mainz. It also changes the date from the 11th century to the 9th century, indicating that Joan reigned between Leo the 4th and Benedict the 3rd in the 1850s. So let's just move the dates. It makes sense. Let's add some names in. We definitely don't have good record from the Catholics themselves, right?
Yeah.
Aside from the whole fact that they have a library and historians and things like that.
Yeah.
So John Angelicus is born at Mainz. He's pope for 2 years, 7 months, and 4 days, and died in Rome. At this point, there was a vacancy in the papacy for 1 month. And they claim that John was a woman who, as a girl, had been led to Athens dressed in the clothes of a man by a certain lover of hers. At this point, she becomes proficient in a diversity of branches of knowledge until she has no equal. And she's in Rome, so she starts to get taught liberal arts, and she becomes a great master. And her opinion of life and learning arose in the city. And at this point, she's chosen for pope. This seems like a really easy transition, right? Just walked in off the street looking like a man. And maybe it was this easy back in the day for men. It still seems fairly easy, but just walked through and did her thing, became the pope.
Yeah. I mean, this is also difficult back then, because most of the popes were just chosen because of their political allegiances. And this was all, you know, this is a member of the whatever family that is presently controlling Rome, so they're now pope.
Right, but she wouldn't have been part of a family, right?
Yeah,
it sounds
exactly.
Like she just wandered in off the street.
That would be a little difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. So while pope, in those 2 years, she becomes pregnant by the companion. Which companion? Unknown. Probably not the same guy that brought her in. And through the ignorance of the exact time when the birth was expected, she delivered the child while in a procession. This one made more sense. Like during procession, a baby is born potentially. And this is actually happens on from St. Peter's to the Lateran in a lane once called the Via Sacra, or the Sacred Way, but it's now known as the Shunned Street between the Colosseum and St. Clement's Church. I would love to know if these are really their names. And if they are, these are some great reasons why, right?
Yeah.
And then, like I said, she would have been buried in St. Peter's graveyard. So, yeah. let's see. She's not listed on the names of the Holy Pontiffs because of her female sex and on account of the fact that she was pregnant during the time that she was Pope. One version of the Chronicon gives an alternate fate for her, saying that she didn't die immediately after she was beaten by all the people, but that she did many years of penance and that her son from the affair became the Bishop of Ostia and ordered her entombment in the cathedral when she died. Like, that seems awfully strict, but also probably if there was a woman that was the Pope, it actually makes more sense that she would have been confined to a church for a period of time. Also, this does not attribute to the fact that maybe this person was, you know, saw themselves as a man. We don't know. It's very vague. But there's other references to a female pope attributed to early writers. None appear prior to that first document, however. The most commonly cited is from someone who compiled the Liberal Pontificals, which was, and they noted a female of the pope, was a contemporary of the female pope. However, the story is only found in one super unreliable narrative. So maybe, maybe not. The manuscript that is that this is in the Vatican Library, and it bears relevant passage inserted as a footnote at the bottom of the page, which I think is funny that like a story such as this would just be a footnote. Like, oh, by the way, there was a female pope. She had a baby. And then she died. And the footnote's weird because it's out of sequence and a different handwriting, and it dates from a different time period. The witness to the female pope is likely to be based on an account and not the source. The same is true of every other version of it. Some of the manuscripts contain a brief mention of the female pope named Joanna. And like I said, that would have been the feminine of John. Mm-hmm. But all the manuscripts that have the name Joan or Joanna are all from a much later period and not from the period in the earliest manuscripts. Some versions of the legend suggest the subsequent popes were subjected to an examination to ensure that they were indeed male. Mm-hmm. And they would have sat on a special chair.
Oh, the chair. I've heard of the chair. Yes.
Chair with a hole in it. The chair with a hole in it is a poop chair. Mm. It's designed for you to defecate through. But also, it would be an easy way to look up to ensure that all the bits and pieces that are supposed to be there are actually, in fact, there.
Mm-hmm.
And this chair actually does exist, which is the funny thing. There is a chair in the Vatican that matches this description. Is that what they used it for? Unknown. But in the 1290s, one of the priests recounted in a vision, he saw the seat where the said where it was said the Pope is proved to be a man. Maybe.
All right.
And then the other thing to note is Pope Joan has been associated with marvelous happenings. So in the 1300s, which was a period of time where there were often a lot of writings about miraculous things happening, that after Pope Joan was revealed as a woman, it rained blood for 3 days and three nights. In France, there were marvelous locusts with six wings and powerful teeth, and they flew through the air and then drowned in the British Sea. And then their bodies were rejected by the sea and corrupted the air and then ended up killing a bunch of people.
Interesting.
A very violent way to go.
Yeah, I mean, 1300s is plague time and everything else, so I'm sure, you know.
Right.
People were writing all kinds of crazy stuff. So,
right. This was definitely a period of time where a lot of magical and insane shit was happening. But also, you know, living through the years we've lived through the last about 10 years, they don't really seem that wild anymore. seems like a normal year lately. I get it. and then from the 13th century onward, basically everybody believed this legend and it's widely passed around. And Joan is used as an example for a lot of Dominican preaching. And there is a book that was written for Pope Sixtus IV that contains the following account about the female pope. So Pope John, the eighth of John of English extraction, was born in Mainz and said to have arrived by popedom by evil art, disguising herself like a man, whereas she was a woman. She went when young with her paramour and learned man to Athens. and made so much progress in learning that coming to Rome, she met with few that could equal, much less go beyond her in the knowledge of the scriptures, and learned by ingenious reading, and disputations, acquired so great respect and authority that upon the death of Pope Leo, by common consent, she was chosen pope in his room. And she was going to the Lateran church between the Colosseum Theater and St. Clement's. To her travail came upon her, and she died on the place, having sat 2 years, 1 month, and 4 days, and was buried there without pomp. The story is vulgarly told, but by very uncertain, obscure authors. Therefore, I have related it barely and in short, lest it should seem obstinate and pertinacious. Admitted what is so generally talked. I had better mistake it with the rest of the world, though be certain that what I have related may not be altogether incredible. So this reference leaves out the story of the baby, but for sure makes you wonder, like, in this story, it almost sounds like she fell off a horse and died versus had a baby and died, which yeah. I think is interesting. This references about this story also blow up in the Middle Ages and Renaissance, because it's kind of a romantic story and they do love that kind of stuff in the Middle Ages. And there's even a statue in Rome of St. Agnes that people claim is Joan. The statue had never been mentioned, of course, by anybody prior to that, but it starts to be assumed that that is what the statue is actually supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a 14th century guidebook for pilgrims that even says that the female pope's remains are buried in St. Peter's. So like they benefited from this story. The yeah. Roman church did for quite a while. And then in a trial in 1415, Jan Hus argued that the church didn't necessarily need a pope, because during the pontificate of Agnes, or Joan, it was clear that they didn't need to have a pope if a female could be a pope. And then in 1587, a magistrate in Bordeaux published his first attempt to deconstruct the legend. So I think that's pretty interesting, is that during the Reformation, they're like, no, we got to tear this shit down. We got to stop telling the story of this woman, stop passing this along. So they start to look at the legend closer and start to look at the historical principles around it. Mm-hmm. And the legend just kind of falls apart as you start to look at it very, you know, linearly and historically. So then in 1601, Pope Clement VIII declares the legend of the pope, female pope, to be totally untrue. The famous bust of her, or of Agnes, which had been carved and placed elsewhere, was destroyed, relabeled, or renamed. They destroyed it the same way that they did the women in Egypt, basically. And overall, the story is pretty much demolished. I think in the 17th century, a historian suggested the tale probably originated in satire against Pope John the 11th, who died in his early 20s. But there's not any strong like attachment to that either. You've got a handful of other things that may have surrounded that in the 16th century. You know, like a couple of works of art may have originated from tales of Pope Joan.
Yeah.
But most likely, you know, no new stories start to pop up. And then the Protestants think, you know what? This story benefits us. This story benefits us well. So they start to write a lot of stories about the legend of Pope Joan in their anti-Catholic writings. And of course, the Catholics respond with their own like negative writings, like, no, that's not what happened. And it just becomes this argument between the Protestants and the Catholics. Even an English writer, Alexander Cook, wrote a book called Pope Joan, a dialogue between Protestant and a Papist to prove the existence by reference to Catholic traditions. And then it gets republished several times because it really takes off. And then a whole bunch of books come out about this female pope, including this one, this Alexander Cook book gets republished in 1675 called, and this is one hell of a name, A Present for a Papist or the Life and Death of Pope Joan, plainly proving out the printed copies and manuscripts of popish writers and others that a woman called Joan was really Pope of Rome and was there delivered a bastard of the sun in the open streets as she went in solemn procession.
There you go.
A title.
That's quite the title.
Right? This is the one that really, though, goes into detail about her giving birth to a son in plain view of everyone, very graphically in front of everybody, and has a detailed engraving of a baby with a surprise look poking its head out from under her robes, right? And early on, everybody was like, this is weird, but probably true, right? Like, we don't have any reason not to believe this. Because why would Protestants lie? Why would anybody lie about this story? This seems like a totally normal story. Now, when you look at this story from a modern lens, let's jump forward a little bit. Most people are like, it's probably just a medieval legend because those people in that time period loved a good romantic, this is King Arthurian crap's time and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Love a good story. There's no evidence for a female pope other than, you know, the story was believed for a really long time. That's essentially their basis for the story is everybody believed it. And there were like sculptures, but they were made after the fact.
Okay.
Where you try to place her in the timeline of Catholic popes between Leo and Benedict don't work. Because when Leo died, immediately Benedict is elected. So there was no way. Although, we want to start talking about anti-popes, we can get into a whole new realm of what the hell's going on, because there's a lot of really interesting anti-pope information.
Yeah.
But that is not an anti-pope situation as far as they know.
Okay. Yeah, because I've been, as I've mentioned many times, listening to my whole German history podcast, and there's lots and lots and lots of stories there with, you know, counter-appointed popes, and you're tons of times where you got 2 to 3 popes all running around and everybody split on who is actually the pope. And, you know, of course, whoever wins out, and the other two are, you know, anti-popes, but it's just kind of winner gets to tell the story. But it's very interesting to see how often that happened. It just seemed to happen over and over and over.
Right.
Just get different factions appointing their own pope and trying to shove it down everybody else. So.
Well, even with the anti-popes, there's no space for this 2-year and 7-month pope to have popped in for anybody in this period of time is what the consensus is. And it's noted that even enemies at the time didn't mention a female pope. Like, seems like something that people would like quote on, right?
Yeah.
Nobody at the time said anything. So it seems a little weird that they wouldn't have. Even the anti-popes didn't say anything about it.
Yeah.
Which would be the prime person to say something. But yeah, never said anything. There is another book, The Female Pope, The Mysteries of Pope Joan, theorizing that if the female pope did exist, the more plausible time frame would have been between 1086 and 1108. At this point, there were so many anti-popes that it would have like been easy to lose track of which one was where when. And this would have been during the time when the city was occupied by Henry IV, who was the only Roman emperor. And then later it would have been sacked by the Normans. But yeah, the timing just is wrong for the original time frame. And it's wrong for other time frames for no one else to have said anything. Mm-hmm. There would have been a lot of writing at the time. So weighing all the evidence, most people are convinced that Pope Joan was mostly a historical figure. And probably not all of these details have been passed down truthfully. Even if she was historically like true, probably like it's more wishful thinking than accurate. It was just this really good story that seemed to work for a lot of people.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now the throne with the hole in the seat. And I'm sure that this is why people call it a throne, like the toilet, the porcelain throne. It currently resides at St. John Lateran, the former residence of the popes in the center of Catholicism. This and other toilet-like chairs were used in the consecration of Pope Paul Pascal in 1099. One is still in the Vatican Museums. One is in the Musée du Louvre. And the reason for the configuration of the chair is probably speculated. They were originally considered Roman bidets, which I don't know how that one works, or imperial birthing stools, which because of their age and imperial links were used in ceremonies by popes intent on highlighting their own imperial claims. I'd like to know how that worked. What does that ceremony look like? My imperial claim, and I sit and expose
my
genitalia to others. I don't understand. Like, I'd like to know more about the throne is what I'm telling you, but I don't want to know more on it. And apparently in Rome in 1406, for the enthronement of Gregory the 12th, the Pope sat briefly on two of these chairs. And he was able to verify that he was indeed a man. So that was part of like their sign to tell people later that that was like during the height, because 1406 would have been the height of like the stories. So they like definitely wanted to show off that they were men at that point. That would indicate a lot of people were seeing this, and that feels very vulgar for the Catholic Church. At any rate.
Different times, man.
I guess. Another interesting note is that medieval popes from the 13th century onward started to avoid the direct route between the Lantern and St. Peter's, so that alley, they stopped taking. But there's no evidence that that dated back any earlier. It was just during that period of time. Why, though? No idea. Probably it was because of the legend, because it really did date back to the period of that legend being most popular. But why they chose to do that, other than that, unknown.
Yeah.
Some writers, of course, refer to the female pope as John the Eighth. Genuine Pope John the Eighth reigned between 872 and 882. Which that time works, right? Due to the Dark Ages' lack of record, confusion often reigns in the evaluation of these events, however. And the legend also conflates with a gap in the numbering of the Johns, so that's all mixed up. Because in the 11th century, Pope John the... Jesus Christ Almighty, all these XIVs. XIV is 14. Was mistakenly counted as two popes because no one else could figure out Roman numerals just like me. They don't have to pause every time they see him, just me and whoever was counting popes in the 11th century. And when Petrus Hispanus was elected pope in 1276, he believed there had already been 20 popes named John, so he skipped the number 20 and named himself Pope John the 21st. So we got a real mess with the Johns and the Catholic Church, which also is fun. And then in 2018, all this time has passed. We've gotten to the point where we're like, No, there's no evidence this woman ever really existed. It looks like it's a complete story, right?
Yep.
Enter archaeologist Michael Habit from Flinders University. And what does he have? Physical proof of a potential female pope. And what does he have? Papal monograms that are on medieval coins that are two significantly different monograms that are attributed to John the Eighth. So he looks at one from 856 and one from 858. And the one from the first one he finds from 856, he believes belongs to Pope John. And the later one that he finds, he believes is from Pope John the Eighth. They look very similar, but they should be the same pope, and they're not. Yeah. So he thinks this is evidence of a female pope. I looked at the coins earlier today. I did not get that. They're literally just initials and numbers, but what do I know? I can't tell Roman numbers. So.
Interesting. Yeah.
Right? So here's what the truth of the story probably is. Boring. Likely Joan's born of a very Roman love of satire. Romans have excoriated political leaders for centuries by posting humorous verses or like talking statues outside of Piazza Navona. They have a lot of like gendered tropes and sexual obscenities that like punctuate this. So they have one like the Pope and all of his prelates are buggers. Like they just like to kind of shit talk the Pope.
Yeah.
To the point where the guy that wrote that particular one was executed by the Pope. Like, no, we don't take your bullshit, Bob. And a lot of this, like I said, is probably just a lot of shit talking. So a 17th century pamphlet memorably imagines the cardinals in an ongoing conclave as whores who fight for control of a bordello. And so Like I said, most likely that's the same. We know her story first appeared in 1255, probably older. And what they think is that it came from a period of upheaval when the popes were in anti-pope kingdoms, and many Romans resisted the pope's encroaching authority. So they used Joan as a weapon to mock the priests, because they were like, you guys can't even decide amongst yourselves who should be pope, and now you're going to tell us what to do? Hell no. So they drew on whatever scandals they could, and then particularly picked on certain things that pissed them off, like pornocracy and the rule of harlots. Because when the papacy came under the control of Theodora, the wife of a Roman consul, and her daughter, they helped install Sergius III as pope, and he had a concubine at the time, and then later had a son.
Yeah.
And then a grandson who was also pope. So, like, what they think it is an allegory for when a woman was actually in control and pushing all the levers and got to have her kiddo become pope. Because even from the story where they had with Pope Joan having the baby and the baby survived, they became a bishop, right? Like, still was able to move him in. Very Tudor style in this. The other thing is that Joan speaks to Christianity's wider problem with sex in general. You know, you've got your sexual ethics taken from Aristotle, so it's not considered a pleasurable act, but Joan is considered promiscuous. And, like, she's this sheep hope who has her cervix dilate in the midst of sacred duties. So it's the antithesis of what a proper Christian virgin would do, right?
Sure,
right?
Yep.
And in the 16th century, the Protestants who brought this story back to the limelight, they seized this idea of, like, Christian teachings and how she's this Catholic whore, essentially. And they linked her to the Whore of Babylon, because, like, they couldn't just bring up the story that was fun and terrible, but then they had to make her out to be evil, which just kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And then Catholics, of course, see a different parallel. They see Queen Elizabeth I, because she's a woman who never married nor produced an heir. And her act of supremacy set her up as a popess of her own Anglican church. So both Joan and Elizabeth were painted as heretics going against church teachings. So, like, they all used it to their benefit and really demonized women. And it was really shitty. But long story short, probably didn't exist. Probably a tool. One of those great ways that we prove the patriarchy could knock some women down and shit talk along the way.
Yeah, that does take a lot of the fun out of it.
It does. Well, let's go down the rabbit hole.
Just fun story to bummer, but yeah.
I know, it is a fun story, and then it's kind of like, and then you realize, like, the context sucks, right?
Yeah.
But, rabbit hole. Fiction loves this story. If you have not noticed that, like, all sorts of fun stories and movies have come out as a result of this. So Mark Twain and another writer by the name of Alfred Jarry translated this story as The Curious History of Pope Joan. And Alfred Jarry also wrote a book called The Pope's Mustard Maker, which is an opera about a female pope known as Jane of Eggs, who operates under the name of John the Eighth. So, like, the humor of Mark Twain, they thought it was pretty funny. You've got a historical romance made into a German musical, which I do love. There's been multiple films made about the story of Pope Joan, the first one being called Pope Joan from 1972, and then one called The Devil's Impostor from 2009. And it was a little bit different.
Yeah.
So you can guess. So yeah, the story just kind of keeps blowing up. There's a song that was done, and in 2016, a video game where Pope Joan is referenced as the inspiration for one of the characters. So there's actually multiple video games where she just kind of pops up. That's the story of Pope Joan. It sure would be a fun story if it was true.
Yeah. It wasn't just made up propaganda to ruin all kinds of fun things.
Yeah. And like I think the thing that's really interesting for me about the propaganda is how many different ways it's been used through different times by like the same people fighting each other.
Yeah.
I guess that's the true definition of good propaganda.
Yeah, you just keep digging it back up, I guess.
I guess. Let's start a revolution. Let's bring it up again. I'm gonna write a book now.
So time to come up with a new Pope Joan movie then. You're...
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Just gonna have to do something different with it this time. So
oh, I know. You have to come up with something good though. I have to like do real work for that. That seems like a lot of work. I'll let this one go. You can write the book, Will.
Yeah, yeah. You know. Spin it into a trans rights thing or something like that, and then you know, make it timely.
You can do that. That sounds easy. You have free time all the time. Yeah, yeah. Definitely sounds so much free time is going to be put into that. Yeah. So yeah, that's my story tonight.
Nice. Yeah. No, that's interesting. Yeah, I think I just heard that name before with people throwing around, but I didn't really know anything about it. So it's pretty fascinating. I mean, it sounds remarkably sad after learning about what all it was really and done with it and everything, but it sounds like a wild story. So,
did you ever listen to the podcast Stuff You Missed in History Class?
No.
So that's where I first heard this story like 10 years ago. And when I first started listening to the podcast, their stories, I loved it. But you get fatigued after a while listening to a podcast and being on the air for 20 years. Yeah, that's where I first heard this one. Such an interesting story.
Cool. I might have to dig that podcast up sometime and check it out.
Yeah.
Well, very cool. Well, thanks for the story and the information. It's definitely something I didn't really know much about. So cool stuff. And thank you everybody for listening to us this week. You know, as always, rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends about our podcast. We will catch you all in a week. Bye, folks.
Bye.